everybody. This is Charles with the Barbershop Group.
And this is Riley, your co-host.
Today, we are going to be bringing a special guest on. A lot of times, guys, you know, we talk to therapists, we talk to professionals, we talk to people who are talking at you, maybe educating you about something. And, you know, those things are great. We're glad to provide those resources to you. But equally, guys, we think it's also important that you hear from guys next door, because every guy next door, trust me, has a story. Every guy next door has something that you can learn from. And we know really honestly that it makes a lot of sense to be able to hear from people who are just like you. And sometimes, guys, I have to tell you, some of the stories that you hear will blow your mind. And sometimes you can connect and sometimes you can't. So today we have a great guest in-house. Today we have Marcel Anderson on. Marcel, are you there?
I am here, Brother Charles. Thank you for having me, Brother Riley. Thank you, guys, for having me.
Hey, you know what? Thank you for joining us, man, you know, and taking some moments out of your day to speak to us, okay? So as I said, guys, we've got Marcel Anderson with us today, and he's a native of Spartanburg, South Carolina. Shout out to Spartanburg, South Carolina. I do remember that place not too far from Greenville. It is a lovely place, and if I'm not mistaken, Marcel, it's growing quite a bit, as I hear.
It is growing very speedily, man. I'm telling you, it's just great environment, great atmosphere to be in, and definitely consider living there one day, hopefully in my future as well, hopefully moving back.
Yeah, man, I do miss the triangle of South Carolina, man. It's been a long time since I've been there, and I've got to get back there to check some things out. So, you know, Marcel is a graduate of St. Augustine University, got his bachelor's degree in psychology, and you know, one of the other things that he was able to do was he was able to get his professional license from North Carolina Central University. He's also received his master's in science and human behavior from Capella University. And he's also a published author, guys. And you know, we congratulate you on being able to go back and finish up, man, because as you said, you faced some really, really tough challenges, you know, when you were at really a very good place in your life, a very good point in your life, and you had a lot of things going on for yourself, man. It just, everything came to an abrupt end. So, you know, for a lot of the listeners who don't know your story, you know, we're going to talk about that a little bit, you know, because it also impacts the work that you do with people today. What was going on for you? What was going well for you? And then, you know, like, take us through some of the events that led to what changed so dramatically in your life.
Yes. So almost 8-9 years ago, things were going well for me. Things were moving in the right directions. I was living out my dream of becoming a inspirational neo-soul contemporary gospel artist. I had just released my first demo CD during the summer of 2010, and everything was going very, very well. During that time, I was also an educator in the high schools as a special education case manager for a high school locally in North Carolina, until I was caught off guard. And oftentimes, when people get caught off guard, don't know what hits them, they don't know how to respond. In this particular incident and situation, I was caught off guard in a home invasion, where I was held gunpoint, handcuffed, and also blindfolded for about 2+ hours in a home invasion, defending for my life. The robber was there, who had the gun in his hand, and of course the pole in another hand, shoved me into a back room where I had to defend for my life. And the robber simply told me, if I did everything he told me to do, I may live. And I want you guys to think about that. As I come back later and actually speak on that, I may live. So those words being spoke to me while I'm trying to defend myself and not even knowing if I would even survive in this moment, I wanted to do everything he told me to do. And that's exactly what I did. But during this particular home invasion, I was brutalized. I was beat up pretty badly with the pole and also a gun, and also the body of that robber who stomped me with his foot on numerous occasions and shoved me into another room, laid me flat face down, and it began to, you know, call me out my name, and then took the pole that he had in his left hand and began to pull down my pants and then shoved it up my backside, first time about 35 times. And then again, a little bit later, probably about 10 minutes later after that, another 20, 35 times to the point to where I almost fainted. I didn't even think that this could even happen to a man, but in that moment, it did happen to me, and I did not know how to respond. But the only thing I could do is just, again, freeze my body and become numb to the pain that was happening to me at that time, because internally, I was sore, I was in pain, I was traumatized holistically, and it did so much internal damage to me that I had to go to multiple surgeries because of it. And because of that, I end up going through multiple surgeries and live with a colostomy bag for about 5 to 6 months, hospitalized for about 4 weeks the first time, and then another week after living with the colostomy bag. So I went through a lot of challenges during that particular time where I did have to go into immediate surgery. So that's why I was hospitalized. That's how much damage it took place to my internal organs, where I had to be hospitalized for about 4 weeks. And basically, you learn how to walk and learn how to adapt back into society and re-engage back into society successfully because of all the things that took place to me at that particular time. It was a challenge, but I'm standing here today to talk about it and help other men in particular who also went through the same ordeal and who are oftentimes ashamed of their victimization or the things that they've gone through as a sexual assault survivor. But I was able to write about it and today talk to you about it, and that's why I'm here to let you know that I did go through all of that, but it is how I responded that helped me to stand here today and talk about it.
Marcel, I'm sure that there's so many listeners that just can't even imagine like going through what you went through. And I like that you know, how you wrap that up and you say that you're standing here today. And so, you know, while you're sharing your story with us, that's not your whole story. And, I think a question that some of the people listening might have is, you know, once you went through that event and you had all the, you know, your post, you know, surgeries and all that, and what you mentioned the word, you know, feeling ashamed, and a lot of people, I think in that situation would feel scared to speak out or to share their story. What helped you overcome that fear or feeling ashamed, and what's helped you to push through and to actually speak out?
I mean, there's several things. And I think the number one thing is my faith, believing in a higher power and believing that what I've experienced wasn't just for me, and had to really reassess, evaluate, and analyze, why am I here still after all that I've gone through, and what does this mean for me, but also for someone else. Before this incident, I had a strong faith, but my faith was really tested after this post, you know, the surgery and everything else. So I was really put to test. And when I heard from my faith and God, who I believe in, it caused me to really ask some hard questions about my faith and why this happened to me. Even if I did not get an answer from whom I believed in. But it caused me to do some soul searching, and I had to spend a lot of time with myself because I was furious. I was upset. I was mad. I didn't trust a lot of people because of what I encountered, what I experienced. However, when I experienced this ordeal, I also realized that I knew I could not have been the only person or only man in particular who experienced this. So I began to research and connect with others who I felt that had some answers for me. And I sought out, you know, the website and found some organizations, 1 in 6 Male Survivors, Call to Men, No More, and some other local crisis centers and organizations, and realized that I was not the only man who experienced or encountered something to this ordeal. So then I realized that I also needed some help, even realizing that others had experienced experience that, and that was good. But during my hospitalization, the local crisis center, of course, receives a report when a survivor has gone through a sexual assault, sexual violence, whether it's male or female, boy or girl. They receive that report locally, and they come to the hospital to support you. Immediately, I rejected their support. Why? Because at that time, I didn't need anyone help. Why? Because if you read my story, I was in the helping business of helping a coworker of mine, and I didn't know who to trust because of what happened. And then immediately, again, even though they had my best interest at hand, I, at that moment, was just trying to heal. I didn't really want to hear anybody advice. Again, I put up a wall in terms of receiving support. But a little bit later, I realized that the local crisis center was so helpful in my recovery process and everything that I experienced, to the point to where what I thought was going to harm me actually saved me. And the reason why I say that, because when I looked at my doctor's bills and my family, we all assessed my doctor's bills, it was over $100,000 worth of hospital bills. But I didn't pay not zero of that doctor's bills. Why? Because it was victim compensations, resources that was available. When I became open to the resources and the professional counseling and the guidance from those individuals who wanted to help me and not harm me, when I became open, that's when I actually truly became better and also recovered even better because of me being open-minded with the support. So one guy, the professional help, and then again, trusting myself, also trusting other people around me and really trusting the process of those who truly have my best interest in hand. However, I still was guarded, still had some reserve, but I still submitted to the process in which I believe that was supposed to be done right.
Yeah. So, you know, Marcella, there's one question I do have for you. You kind of got into it. People experience stuff like this. One of the things that arises is anger. And so I want to know, like, how you went about dealing with the anger, because I don't know if the person was ever who did this to you. I don't know if they were ever caught and, you know, were found guilty and serving time. I don't know, man, but I know that anger is something that you would have probably had to encounter at some point. So how did you go through that?
Yeah, like I said, it was a process, and it still is a process. There's a biblical principle that I believe in. Vengeance is mine, said the Lord, they will repay. And oftentimes, as humans, we oftentimes cannot control everything, right? And so we have to learn how to submit to the person who can control it. And I had to submit to God, who I believed in my faith. And I began to, again, ask why and also ask the questions, but I also began to really dive deeper in my spirituality and really to and release, you know, that energy, that anger through prayer, through conversations, the right conversations, not every conversation that I had was the right conversation as it relates to why I feel the way I feel. But I also connected to professional counseling, as I stated earlier, which I did not want to seek because I felt as a man, I was strong enough to withstand the situation, or this is not really anger. This is part of the process, right? But my responses to people and situations really outweighed my outcomes and where I wanted to go. So I had to really put a handle on that, because even the nicest people wanted to help me, but I wanted to, you know, I rejected that help because I didn't know what their real intentions were, right? So in that particular situation, my anger came on the routes because, again, I began to pray quite a bit. And also, again, professional help and really talking to someone who could listen and hear how I really felt, and they could, you know, respond the right way, and not just, you know, with any type of words that would make me feel good, but they truly wanted to get to the core of why I was feeling the way I was feeling, and really assessing my situation head on And again, you know, prayer and professional help, but also family support. Oftentimes when survivors of sexual violence go through these things, the family oftentimes are not always around. But in my book, I talk about the importance of family support and why survivors need that family support. And my family, you know, rallied around me and supported me. And even in my anger, even in my upsetting moments, they gathered around me and they understood and oftentimes didn't even say anything. They didn't get angry back at me because I responded to them a certain way, especially early on in my recovery process. But over time, they began to realize my healing and my transformation, you know, that was taking place, and they began to engage in conversation. So I think, again, just really trusting the process and really, you know, really dealing with yourself, because if you don't deal with yourself, it'll deal with you. And I think that was the most important piece of me, you know, getting through my anger process, me dealing with it, you know, and mentally, spiritually, and socially was very hard. But I had to really transform my mind through prayer, but also my situation that would allow me to even talk about it. Because, again, I wanted to get revenge, but oftentimes getting revenge doesn't make things easier. Sometimes it makes things worse. So, again, I had to go through different steps and different stages of this process in order for me to get to this moment. As a psychoanalyst by the name of Eric Erickson, he says, if you don't deal with, that's eight stages to psychosocial theory in terms of identity development and developing as a human, we're going to all go through these stages. He said, if you don't deal with your challenges at an earlier stage in your life, it's going to cause more challenges at a later stage in your life. So, you know, not only just reading that and looking at that, I realized I had to deal with this. If not, it's going to follow me. And if I have other challenges, it's going to just push layers on type of layers. And he says, you know, teaching is good for the growth and the development, but you also have to deal with it if it would deal with you. So, you know, after experiencing that and reading that, it kind of helped me to kind of resolve some things in my life because I had to become real. I think oftentimes people want to put those types of situations, you know, in the dark, and then when something catastrophic happens, you know, it's too late because they explode, they respond, you know, the wrong way. So
I know you said a lot there, Marcel, and I think, I mean, so many good things, and it's hard to pack. It's hard to pack as much as you just did, but into just a conversation. So I think that's even more reason for people to go out and buy your book. But there's one thing that I'd like to clarify, because I think people can get this confused so easily. And when you talk about that, going through that process, I think sometimes it can, you know, we can hear that as kind of almost checking off a box and saying, well, you know, I read God's word, I sought out professional help, I talked to family members, and then, okay, I'm done. But the way you talk about it sounds like it's not a check off the box sort of deal. It's more of it almost sounds like even though you've in so many ways moved past this event and put it behind you, it's still an ongoing process. And I want to just make sure that I'm understanding that correctly, and that, if you know, give you a chance to kind of clarify that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It is a ongoing process, and I think you can definitely heal at different levels because I am now able to talk about it because I dealt with the situation firsthand. And I think the quicker you deal with it, I'm not saying the easier it would be, but it does show, you know, statistically, the sooner you deal with, you know, these types of ordeals, the easier the process would be long term. However, that doesn't mean that you're still not going to deal with it. Because if you become an advocate and begin to talk about it, you bring awareness, you're still talking, you're still reflecting on your situation. But I think for individuals like myself, this becomes therapeutic, writing about it and not internalizing it, right? And sharing it, and of course, getting it out of your system to allow others not only to read about it, but hear about it, but also to connect with you, that you are a group, you're connecting with other individuals who can empathize with you, who can connect with you, and know that they're not alone. Oftentimes people going through these situations and have gone through it for so many years, they feel like they're not alone. So that's why it's important for people like myself and 1 in 6 and male survivors and other individuals who I connect with to rally together and bring awareness to these issues and these social issues and talk about it so people know that they're not alone. Even if 30 years go by, they say, I never talk about it. I think I'm ready. And that's okay that you're ready now to talk about it, because during that time, you may not have been brave enough, or you can feel as if this was the right time for you, but you are brave enough. You are brave enough because, again, the fact that you are even connecting with us now shows that you are brave and you're not less than, even if someone said you are. So I think it's so imperative that, you know, individuals know that they're not alone in this process. And it is a process and it's a journey. The recovery process is a journey. The road to recovery, you know, it's a journey, but you can make it when you have the right people around you, who's rallying around you or supporting you. And again, getting the right help and believing that you can do that. And in addition to that, for me, writing wasn't just therapeutic for me, but also singing. You have to find or even reconnect back to a passion or create a passion that will not only help people, but help others as well. So I created, you know, music that relates to my story and also the social issue, this topic of male sexual violence. So I've written, you know, several songs and albums, as well as written books. So if you get the book, you also can purchase a CD along with it, and you can follow along with the things I've written as relates to my story.
Yeah, that's, man, you know, I'm so glad that you were able to come on today and share your story. Guys, listen, man, you know, Marcel is doing a lot of great work. He's doing a lot of great work. I hope that you all have been able to really, really just internalize some of his experience, man, because, I mean, that was extremely traumatic. I sit here and listen to that, and it just makes me squeamish all over again. You know, we've been talking with Marcel Anderson. He's the author of Still Living, A Victimized Man's Journey. And, you know, it's a great read, guys. Check it out. You know, it's something that... if you have been the victim of sexual violence, or if you know someone who's been the victim of sexual violence, it will definitely create a window into the victim's world, and you get to see a way out too. And that's what's also good about it. A lot of times we hear people talk about their victimization, but it's difficult to get people to talk about the way through. And I think that that's in... I think that's important. And as you heard Marcel say, he's also a performing artist, and we're going to include his YouTube links, at least one of his YouTube links, in the show notes for you guys to be able to check it out. And, you know, while we're talking about all the things that he is doing, he's also the CEO of Accelerating Men, Inc., which is a nonprofit community faith-based organization that mentors young men between the ages of 10 and 18. And this is in North Carolina and South Carolina. And we will include the website and the phone number for that as well. So, Marcel, I really thank you for coming on today. And one last thing that I want to ask you is just if you could give you know, our listeners just one quick thing, what would you want their takeaway to be? Day.
You know, when information and content is fresh in your mind, I have to share it. Eric Erickson also says, when you deal with a challenge in your life or obstacle, it's not the end of the day for you, no matter what you've gone through. And it can become a turning point for you. And he said, but it's all in how you respond to that situation that can either dictate or determine your final destination. So any listener that is out there right now listening to this conversation, I want you to reevaluate what you've gone through and how have you responded to it? How have you responded to it? Could you ever respond to it differently? Are you responding to it positively or negatively? And it can also weigh your outcome. So again, how you respond to that situation can either dictate or determine your final destination. So just be mindful of how you respond to it. Just take a sit back. Don't react so fast, right? Just sit back and say, you know what? How do I need to approach the situation in order to get to my final destination?
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. Again, guys, you've been listening to Marcel Anderson. Okay, look at the show notes. Check it out. Look him up. If you know somebody who has been struggling, okay, get in touch with him. You know, we can't speak highly enough about this. Again, like I said, Marcel, thank you for coming on. Guys, we hope that you've enjoyed today's show. We know that the weekend is coming up. We don't want you guys to drink too much. Don't party too hard, but do engage in self-care. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your families. And we will talk to you all soon.
The Barbershop Group provides safe spaces for men to discuss issues of well-being and mental health. The Barbershop Group also serves as a resource to the community, providing consultations and public speakers through partnerships with attorneys, mental health professionals, family agencies, religious institutions, and other advocates. In the near future, the Barbershop Group seeks to renovate dilapidated residential and commercial properties in urban areas to create respite shelters for displaced men. We will also host mentorship retreats and workshops for young men and adults to foster growth through our Iron Sharpening Iron and our Rebuilding Men programs. In addition, we host a weekly podcast covering issues of mental health, homelessness, financial literacy, education, and leadership. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please email us at info@thebarbershopgroup.org. Visit our Facebook page or call 313-585-9948 for more information.